Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my home.
We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle.
Hey,
so he can play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome back to another episode of the Steelers Hangover, and again, for the eighth straight time, it is a joyous hangover for Steeler fans everywhere as they beat the Miami Dolphins. They beat them to a pulp, 30-12 in the AFC wildcard game. I'm Jeff Hartman, editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, and Brian Anthony Davis. He's always my co-host. How's it going, Brian?
You know, it feels like New Year's Day, Mardi Gras, and my birthday all wrapped up into one, 8 weeks in a row. I love it.
It's a great feeling. It really is. And Steeler fans have every reason to be excited. They're moving on to the AFC Divisional game for the second straight season. The major difference this year, they have Le'Veon Bell and they have Antonio Brown both healthy for this game. Can't be more excited. They go to Kansas City to play the Chiefs. It's a 1 o'clock kickoff next Sunday, in case you didn't know that. And I tell you what, it really is going to be a good game. But before we get to that game, we want to talk about the Dolphins game, and we want to hear from you as well. If you're out there and you want to call in, you can. The phone lines are open. The number is simple, 347-850-8581. Again, it's 347-850-8581. I know the national championship game is going on right now between Clemson and Alabama. I know a lot of people might be watching that, but if you want to talk black and gold, this is your time, this is your place. We have a couple callers already on hold. That's great. Again, the number is 347-850-8581, and I have to say that we're very thankful that we're sponsored by Frank Walker. Frank Walker Law, the top criminal defense firm to call in Western Pennsylvania and West Virginia, and home to one of the nation's top 100 bank trial attorneys in Frank Walker. For more information, visit his website, frankwalkerlaw.com. All right, let's get right to it, Brian. What was your knee-jerk reaction to the game? The game's over, all zeros on the board. What were your first initial thoughts about the game on Sunday?
My first initial thoughts were, you know, that was better than I thought it would be. That was actually, that wasn't even a contest the entire game. I know there were times that it seemed like it could be or was going to be. But, for what I was hoping for, it happened. I was hoping that A.B. would get a chance to go off. He did early. I was hoping that Le'Veon Bell would have a chance to showcase his talent and get his first great game of his playoff career under his belt, and he did that. I was hoping that the defense would come alive and swarm and neutralize a guy that could go off on them in Matt Moore, and they did that. And not only did they do that, I was hoping that they would stop Jay Ajayi, and really did they do that. They were swarming around the ball. They were swarming with the quarterback with five sacks. Everything I was hoping for happened. The one thing I was hoping for is that Ben Roethlisberger would not get murdered. He did not get murdered, but in typical Ben fashion, did not leave completely unscathed. But Ndamukong Suh did not rip his face off, so I'm very happy about that too. You know, in general, Jeff, I'm telling you, that was what we needed. That game was what we were hoping for. And it made me feel better about this team going forward in a lot of ways, Jeff.
Well, there are a lot of good things to point to. Like you mentioned Le'Veon Bell, you mentioned Antonio Brown. I personally would like to talk about the offensive line. And I know that you touched on it, I think, briefly. The offensive line, you know, everyone always sees Le'Veon Bell rushing for a franchise record 167 yards and 2 touchdowns, and they see Antonio Brown have only 5 catches for 124 yards and 2 touchdowns, and they see Ben Roethlisberger basically go untouched until the fourth quarter. We'll talk about that here in a second, I'm sure. And that's all because of the offensive line. They're creating holes. They're giving Ben time. It is great to watch this unit that the Steelers organization has put a lot of draft picks, a lot of money into, with Pouncey, a number one pick, DeCastro, number one pick, Gilbert, second round pick. They have really filled out this line with players that they think are top notch, and it's all come together. And a lot of people are going to point to Mike Munchak, rightfully so, but at the same time, these guys are really becoming cohesive. When was the last time anyone said anything negative about Alejandro Villanueva? He was supposed to be the weak link of the line, and you're not talking about him. When you're not talking about your left tackle, that is a good thing. This unit is one of the best in the league for a reason. But you know what? Enough of us talking, Brian. Let's get our callers in the air. We have 3 people waiting, and we always go to the same person every time first. That's Vito Mankin from New Jersey. How's it going, Vito?
Gentlemen, good evening. Nice team win yesterday, and I was thinking about something through that whole game, guys. If you remember, Jeff, a few weeks ago when Lance was on the call, he was talking about the fact that in those last several wins, we didn't get a full, complete team win where everybody was playing on all, or firing on all cylinders. I think yesterday was the first time in many games where you really saw that, where you really saw a great performance by the defense, great performance by the offense, the line, everybody just come together and do such a great job. So I thought it was a great performance. There's always a negative, Jeff, I'm going to throw in there, because there's something that keeps irking me. It's been irking me for weeks, and you know what that is. When Ben makes those mistakes near the end where he's trying to force something, I think one of the reasons why he threw the pick when he did yesterday is because he probably knows if we get another TD here, we ice the game. But my thing is, everything you're doing is working. We're running the ball effectively. The short passes are working. Why do we need to force anything and take a chance? There's no need for that. So a lot of people, you know, when I was reading the site today, some people were saying that they thought that that interception was on Brown because he couldn't come up with it. Well, it's 4 degrees out, number one. The ball is probably coming at you really hard. And I think Ben was off on that throw, because if you notice, when he has to scamper around and move around, he doesn't plant his feet well. And that's why you see the throw was a little off. And that throw was a little off. And when they were discussing this on NFL Network before the game, they were showing that when he starts going outside the pocket and his feet are not planted well, that's when it seems and tends to make mistakes. And that's why that mistake there was made, because he didn't have his foot planted the right way. And I think the throw was a little off, so Brown couldn't get it. The second one, I just don't know where that one was going at all. But the only positive is that at least they were down the field towards the red zone. So instead of coming away with points, you know, the good thing is the guys were able to stop them, and they only got field position inside the Miami 30. But I think these could be costly mistakes over the next game if he continues to do that, because if things are working, there's no need to force it. You have a lead. Worst case scenario, if we come away with a field goal, then we're just heading to the lead. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll agree and disagree with you, Vito, in terms of Roethlisberger and the interceptions. The first interception, I know that the conditions weren't great, and I know that the throw was maybe a tad high, but that pass went right through Antonio Brown's hands. And I guarantee if you asked Antonio Brown about that interception, he would say that's a pass he has to catch. I know that it was coming in hot. I know that the ball was cold. I know that it was tough. But that's what the primetime big league players make that catch. And I go back to even when I played as a very young kid playing flag football all the way through middle school and so on. My father used to always say the same thing. If it hit your hands, you should have caught it. That was his philosophy on receiving. And maybe I've just kind of adopted that philosophy myself. But I don't put that on Roethlisberger. That's a pass that Antonio Brown, in my opinion, catches 99 out of 100 times. He wasn't – was he pushing the ball downfield? Yes. Could he have run and just taken the yardage given to him? But he wanted to get a first down. I understand that. That's a play, in my opinion, that's on Brown. Now, the second interception, well, that's a different story. We can get into how they shouldn't have been throwing in that situation at all. It was a throw. It was a run-pass option, some are saying. But reports are now saying that was just a straight throw. pass to DeMarcus Ayers. Whatever happened on that play, it was a bad play from the start, and it ended poorly. That was obviously when Roethlisberger injured his foot. So I'll give you half and half, Vito. I think that the first interception was not Ben's fault. The second one was all his fault. But you know what? You take the good with the bad. You bring up his footwork. It's not perfect when he leaves the pocket, but he makes a lot of plays outside the pocket. So you don't want to take that away from him. In your opinion, Brian, the interceptions, on Ben or not?
Not all on Ben. First one, it was Antonio, so I do agree with you. Look, he had a fantastic day stat-wise, 124, but it's 124 yards. But if you look closer, he only caught 55.6% of his targets. He had five receptions, but he was targeted nine times, and three of those were his fault. Those balls were well-placed. They were balls that he could have caught. He was running with, you know, I think in Antonio's mind, he was looking for a four-touchdown glory day. And we get that with Antonio sometimes. And now, this is not going to be a rip fest on Antonio, but there's still times that it's about the glory for Antonio Brown. And I felt like he was running with the ball and trying to make amazing plays before he went to the basics and just catching the football. The second one was Ben just, you know, going out of the pocket, getting flushed out, saying, I got to make something happen here so we could have a dominating game, put this game on ice. And it was a ball he should have never thrown whatsoever. So with that, yeah, he's going to make throws like that. He does that. But here's the thing. For those throws that he makes those throws that are just perfect and just right. And this is not a perfect football team. That's almost as perfect as you're going to get that game they had yesterday. That doesn't mean that they can't go all the way. What that means to me is the fact that this is a team that is going to have adversity. But when it's time to get it all together, when it's time to have more points than the other team, this team for the last 8 weeks and four times in the first five games knew how to do that. So there's something in the DNA of this team that you're not going to get a New England perfection type game where they just dominate. They're going to do enough things to win, and that's what you're getting from this team. So with Ben Roethlisberger throwing balls like that, I expect that out of Ben. But I also expect him to throw more touchdowns than interceptions. I expect him to lead this team when it counts.
Yeah, very good. Vito, what do you think?
Well, I think I agree with you guys 100%. I'm also thinking about the fact that play at the end, I guess you guys probably been talking about that, leaving him in a little too long, you know, should they have taken him out when they took Le'Veon Bell out, maybe take him out as well and put Landry Jones in. But then I see some things on the site saying Landry Jones would have came in cold. What if he would have made mistakes and all of a sudden the game is only a touchdown away from being a tie? So you got to look at both thoughts. But my other thing is, why even throw at that point? We could just keep running the ball. There's no need to do anything but run it. There's no need to even throw it. Well, if you want to throw it, take short passes. Throw some short passes. You know, maybe you don't need to go down the field as much. But even if you just run it and you don't get a first down, that's okay too, because you know what? The defense was holding them all day long. I'm just, you know, I guess my only concern, guys,
yeah,
will be how effective will he be next weekend? Will he be 100%? Is he going to be 80%? We'll see.
Well, you know, it's tough to say. It was reported today that Roethlisberger's ankle injury was a re-aggravation of a foot. Well, actually, it wasn't ankle. I should say foot. And that was the foot injury. My guess is that he said from last year that would have been the foot injury he suffered against the Oakland Raiders. He left the game, did not come back. They played the Cleveland Browns the next week at home. That was the game Landry Jones started. Roethlisberger was the backup. Jones went down the first quarter. Roethlisberger comes in and goes ballistic and wins the AFC Player of the Week as a backup. So probably that foot injury. He said he doesn't need the boot anymore. That was just precautionary. I think the telltale sign now, we'll hear from Mike Tomlin tomorrow on Tuesday in regards to the injury updates, but if he's able to practice, I mean him being Ben Roethlisberger, I really think that if he practices Wednesday, even if it's limited, if they give him the day off because it's non-injury related, then I think he's fine. I really do. But ultimately, I look at this and think that Roethlisberger's role in this offense isn't necessarily the same anymore. They don't have to have him slinging the ball over the field, or I should say if things go well. They shouldn't need him to sling the ball over the field. They need Le'Veon Bell to run the ball well. They need the offensive line to get pushed. And if you do that, you limit Roethlisberger to 18 passes, and that's okay. And that's definitely manageable. So that's my own thoughts on that. DeVito, as always, we thank you for the phone call, my friend. Hope you enjoy the week.
You too. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. So, Brian, what do you think about Roethlisberger's mobility going into next week? Does it concern you, you know, with him not necessarily maybe not being 100%? I don't know if anyone's 100% at this point in the season, but what are your thoughts on that?
You know, if you look back on the history of Ben Roethlisberger, there was only one playoff run to an AFC championship game where he was not 100%. So I say not is what I'm saying. And that was his rookie year of 2004. The rest of the years, he had these lingering ailments, and he made three Super Bowls with ailments every single time. And there were concerns about Ben the entire time. I think Ben relies on the drama. I'm not going to go as far as calling him a drama queen like I've heard being thrown out the last 24 hours. This is a guy that thrives under pressure, and he thrives under drama, and he thrives under the spotlight. I had heard, I don't know if this is completely true, but I had heard he made sure that everybody saw that cast. That walking boot when he came out. And it was funny because, from what I understand, in Vegas, the lines just froze right there. They had Pittsburgh 1.5 favorites. And right at that moment, the screens froze and they scrambled and they changed it to Kansas City 1.5 as soon as they saw that walking boot. It was like a mass panic in Vegas, from what I understand. But with that being said, Ben's fine. He's going to come out and play. I don't know if he's doing it to take spotlight off of himself. I know the team mandated that he wore that wasn't his mandate to have it on. I know it's already off. I think it's just a precaution, and we make more of it than it actually is, and that's our job. And that's exactly what we do. We have to analyze everything. But even when he banged up, and you mentioned the Cleveland game, that was a perfect example. He came in, he was banged up. No one even thought he could play. He wasn't starting, and he just went off in that game. And not even a full game. His stats were so amazing, there was only three quarters. And one more thing that I'm going to say about the Roethlisberger situation, the game after that, Aaron Rodgers, in a game that was out of hand, he stayed in, and he threw late bombs. He was throwing bombs in the fourth quarter when that game was over, and he was just going for it. And it's not in their DNA to take these guys, for these guys to come out in the playoffs. It just isn't. A running back could go ahead and fend themselves as much as a quarterback in that situation. Why was he throwing? It was third down. They were trying to end the game. It might have been a little bit careless, but I have no problem with him being in the game at that point either, Jeff.
Yeah, now you bring up the past with Roethlisberger, and it made me think. You said 2004 is rookie year. They go to the AFC Championship game. They kind of stumble their way there, if you remember that Jets game in the divisional round. And they get into the AFC Championship game. You're telling me that you don't remember Dog Bite Gate with Roethlisberger? Tell me I remember that like yesterday, where the reports were that his dog bit his hand prior to the game. Do you remember that, or were you not privy to that knowledge?
No, I mean, unless I've lost something
gosh.
In the last 12 years, I don't remember Dogfight Gate.
Yeah, the reports were that he had, and at that time he was single, obviously, he's a rookie, he had all these dogs, I mean, he liked Rottweilers, and I remember seeing on his website all these pictures of his dog. The reports were that he had a dog bite on his hand. This is after the game this came out, and this is where the aura of Ben being dramatic and over-amplifying injuries started. The dog bite, and then there was also a report that he had some type of fracture in his foot, and this one Bill Cowher came out and said, those are all false. I don't know where you are getting this from. And that's kind of where it started. And then if I remember correctly, 2005 was when he had the thumb injury, and he had to wear the glove on his throwing hand the entire playoff, so the stretch run. 2010, I know he had the injury where he broke his nose. That was when Nada hit him in the face. He had to wear the shield the rest of the way up. And he did have the foot. Very good. Yeah, so there you go. So a little bit of history lesson for you there. If you call in, I've got people on hold. Answer the question, am I making up this dog bite thing? I could have swore I remember this. But still, let's get our next caller on the air. 646-585-0165. I'm with Jeff and Brian. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. This is Bryce calling from Brooklyn.
What's up, Bryce? Do you remember the dog bite scandal, or am I crazy?
I do not remember that. I remember the hand, and I remember the broken toe scandal. I remember the broken toe scandal.
Okay. All right. Well, what's up, Bryce?
Yeah, I remember the broken toe scandal, though. Ben saying he had broken toes, and Coward saying he did not have broken toes. Well, that was kind of funny.
So what's on your mind tonight, Bryce, after that game on Sunday?
I mean, it was the type of performance they needed. That's the thing, when you're playing these teams, and it seems Pittsburgh has played a lot of these teams, you know, you watch them, and it seemed like something came on where they played faster. They played faster in the beginning. They came out more aggressive. They were able to jump on them and get the early lead, and that's definitely going to help out their defense, who I think is playing very well right now. You know, what I really like about the win was the way the front seven just really came to play. You've got Maxey playing. You've got McCullers. You don't have Cam Hayward. Yeah, and yet they came out with a purpose. They were hitting. They were teeing off on guys. I think that's the way they need to play defense. I mean, I'm glad he's okay, but I love Bud Dupree's hit on Matt Moore. That's what they need. Because moving forward in the years to come, when James Harrison is no longer there, what you're missing and lacking is it can't be Mike Mitchell. Your intimidator, as much as I like Mike and he'll hit people, you got to have a guy, if you're the Steelers in a front seven, that offensive coordinators and linemen have to account for. I'm hoping that guy is Bud Dupree, simply because we're used to seeing the pressure coming from the right side, very dynamic. You know, the left side has been good, but the right side, Greg Lloyd, James Harrison. You know, we had Kevin Green on the left, who was obviously dynamic, but the majority has been the right. We're shifting it now. Can Bud Dupree on that left side be the dynamic guy to where you just bring in a guy who can be solid on the right, but Bud Dupree is going to be your bell cow? I'm really hoping he could become that and become an intimidator in the front seven. But I like what I saw. Too many empty yards in the passing game. I want to see them run, play more man coverage. I know they got beat deep a couple times, but I think the corners are a lot better. I know I've been saying that. Offensively, good game. Just the offensive line, like you were saying, Jeff, an elite offensive line right now. It's going to be tough. I don't care how you scheme for it in football. I can line up and run 26 counter and 26 wham right at you, and you can't stop it. That can alleviate scheme moving forward, considering we're going to be playing two good coaches here in the AFC.
Yeah, and to your point about Dupree, I agree. That hit, it deserved a flag. There are some fans out that are saying, oh, my gosh, it was a clean hit. And I know Dupree himself said it was a clean hit after the game, but he did target the chest. I give him credit for that, but his helmet did rise up into his chin strap area. That's going to get a flag. When you watch the play live and it looks like Matt Moore was deceased on the field, like, I'm sorry, that reminded me of Colt McCoy back in the day when James Harrison, it's very similar. They're out of the pocket. You're almost thinking, could they run it? And both Harrison and Dupree did the same exact thing. They said, I'm going for it. And they went balls out and they just annihilated the quarterback. And so, although I wasn't upset with the flag, that play set the tone for the defense. And you heard Mike Mitchell after the game, and I wrote an article about this today on the website, is that their goal, and he said this, we wanted to tee off on those guys. And that got me all sorts of jacked up when I saw that, because you know what? That's the way it should be. They should be intimidating the other team. And if you watch that game closely, in my opinion, Brian, I'll get your take on this in a second. Those Dolphins, and it could have been a lot of the cold had something to do with it, they wanted nothing to do with getting hit, it seemed. I mean, the Steelers weren't just hitting. They were trying to send them into last week. And they were gang tackling, and they were physical. And it really looked like it took its toll on the Miami Dolphins. Maybe the only player it didn't was Matt Moore. He was as tough as nails. I give him a ton of credit for sticking in there. And he played well.
Yeah.
But I felt like this defense really, really set the tone. Brian, Did you think that the cold weather was the factor, or do you think the Pittsburgh Steelers were just pounding them into submission?
A little bit of both. There were so many factors there. That weather had them a little bit off, especially when they're practicing in 80-degree weather all week long, and then you come up here and you hit this. Look, my wife made me go to Sam's Club before the game yesterday. You know, when you go to Sam's Club, they, you know, they don't put anything in boxes. You just have to fend for yourself. And so I had to throw everything in the car and get back. And by the time I took it all out, I thought I was going to die. I mean, it was just amazing. Then you turn on the game and you see this complete lunatic, Ryan Shazier, with no shirt on whatsoever. And I mean, and that guy has no hair whatsoever. And so that guy had to be freezing. He was sending a message. He was sending a message that we are tough. You see this. You see our linemen with beat red arms throughout this game, and we don't care. You are not going to stop us. It might have gotten in their head, but the way those guys were hitting from the onset, you know, the weather might have been less of a factor because those guys were just bruising, and I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. What else you got for us, Bryce?
Let me just piggyback off of what you said. I know it's not a Steeler moment, but let me give Matt Moore a ton of credit. I mean, that guy, I tell you what, he's 32. So, I mean, you know, he's a little bit, he's getting a little older. I would love to have that guy as a backup quarterback. Tough, throws a nice deep ball, just gets the ball out. He's a very good backup quarterback. I would say right now, outside of age, he's a better backup quarterback than Landry Jones. And I'm not saying I don't like Landry per se. I just think Matt Moore is more skilled. I think as a backup quarterback, that guy has always come in, played well. He was tough. He didn't make any excuses. He represented himself very well. You got to give that guy a lot of credit.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, Matt Moore is as tough as nails. You got to take that beating. And you think, look, Pittsburgh got 5 sacks. They had 9 quarterback hits. I mean, they forced 2 fumbles. And that guy was running for his life, and he made the plays. I mean, he stuck in that pocket. There were a couple plays where he was getting tattooed and stepping in there, staying tough, making the throws. So kudos to him. Bryce, real quick before I let you go, quick thoughts on Kansas City. What are your thoughts on the Steelers going into Arrowhead?
No, that's going to be a tough game. Their toughest game to date, simply because, and not to, I'm not speaking in hyperbole here, simply because that they're at home, and the fact that the equalizing factor of special teams, they're so much better at special teams than we are. You know, you could look up at this game, and it's a 16-10 game, and Pittsburgh's moved the ball, but you're wondering, why is this game so close? And that's because the hidden yardage of special teams. Outside of our kickers, who I think have done a good job this year, Danny Smith has just wet the bed when it comes to these return games. These return teams, Fitzgerald Toussaint, I love him as a backup running back, has no business returning kicks. Sammy Coates doesn't look fluid doing it. They just can't. They don't block on punt returns. They are not good. And the Chiefs, I think, are rated Pro Football Focus top 5 special teams. This is outside of Tyreek Hill. They just are a solid, well-coached, well-balanced team. That can keep them in the game because we've been wetting the bed. I'm just hoping we don't have a New England 2001 moment where special teams could lose us a playoff game that we, quite frankly, should win. We have the talent to win. But if we can keep that under wraps, punt them, kick them deep, not give up anything in a return game, if we play them straight up, I think we're the better football team.
I agree with you, Bryce, 100%. Tyreek Hill is dynamic, and they're going to have to, in my opinion, kick it out of the end zone on the kickoff if you're able to, and punt the freaking thing out of bounds. Plain and simple. I mean, kick it out of bounds and take your medicine. You don't want to play with fire with that. But, hey, Bryce, we appreciate the phone call. Okay, enjoy the week, and I'm sure we'll talk to you a little bit later.
Great. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of the show.
All right. Thank you very much. If you're listening to the show right now and you want to get on the air, our phone lines are open. We have one more caller to get to here in a second, but the phone lines are open. That's 347-850-8581. Again, that number is 347-850-8581. All right, let's get to this next caller here, Brian. We'll see what this person has to say. We have 347-605-7473. You're on with Jeff and Brian. Go ahead.
Hey, what's up? How you doing?
Hey, is this Ken?
Yes, Ken. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hey, Ken, do you remember the dog bite scandal back in 2004, or am I off my rocker? I might have to find this article and send it to somebody. You remember that?
So while Vito was talking, I took the liberty of searching it on the Google machine. And there's nothing that comes up. I'm sorry, Jeff. I don't know where you're getting this from. There's nothing that comes up. All the work that I don't know if you can find it. Only thing that comes up is all the work that Ben does for the canines and the police department. That's it. All
right. I'm gonna do some digging, Ken. I'm gonna find that thing. I tell you, I'm gonna send it out to everybody. Ken, what's on your mind?
Yeah. So gut reaction was it was two things. Number one, in the beginning, it was kind of a sigh of relief. That first drive, I said, "Oh, okay." So I was able to take a deep breath, and then after the second score, I knew the game. I knew we won the game. My it immediately shifted from, okay, are they going to win the game, to now, how are they going to play throughout the game? How are they going to end it? How healthy are they going to come out of the game? So I had a certain calm throughout the whole game. So I kind of knew they were going to win the game, I was a little bit annoyed because I just wanted the kill shot. I wanted, like, the one score to just be up by 24 points. And no matter what happens, they're not coming back. And we could start seeing reserves early in the fourth quarter. That's what I was waiting for, and it kind of never happened. So I was a little bit annoyed, and I still I'm screaming at the TV every now and then, and you know, little things like that. But they played well, specifically the offensive line and the defense. The defense really played well. Ben put them, you know, with the interception, put them in a bad position, and. These in the return unit too. I mean, the return coverage, but these guys, they made plays. You know, they stopped the run, and they made plays. They created turnovers, and it's a skill. You got to be in the right position, and they recovered the fumbles. There's been plenty of times that they forced fumbles and not recovered them. So I was glad to see that. First of all, Bud Dupree, I'm watching this. I'm like, hold on. Do we have a guy here? Like, Bud Dupree he's telling me he's going to be a guy now? All right. That was a little unexpected. I wasn't expecting to see him dominate just with one-on-one, just beating his one-on-one with, I think that was Juwan Jameson. You know, he's not the best guy, but he's first-round draft pick from Tennessee, I believe. So, you know, he has some pedigree. So that was good to see. And, you know, this whole thing, I'm pretty sure you guys are going to mention it with the Joey Porter incident. You know, just watching him, looking back at him, like, man, like, Joey is really, like, he really poured into these guys. And I could see the development of a Bud Dupree, even when he wasn't on the field for the first half of the season. And, you know, I'm kind of wondering how this is going to affect the team moving forward, with Joey being out. But outside of that, I was happy to see Bud Dupree up there stepping up, just being the enforcer, using his athleticism mixed with the power, man. It just looked like Steeler football. That's what it looked like. You can turn off the clock, you can turn off the year, and point to the and just watch the game, take the jersey numbers off the back of the jerseys, and it looked like Steeler defense. Stopping the run, being explosive, excitement, athleticism, it looked like a Steeler defense to me.
Yeah, you can. You're right, and I think, you know, I'm a very positive guy. If you listen to this show and our Wednesday show, The Standard is the Standard, I'm typically the one. Lance Williams calls me, my co-host on Wednesday. He calls me Joy because he says I'm always super positive.
Right.
I always see the glass half full. I'm never negative. I look at this game, and I was annoyed just like you were. I was like, man, I can't believe these. They're not putting them away. They have a chance to, and they're just not. The silver lining of that crowd, in my opinion, is because the offense didn't have that kill shot, the offense didn't put their foot on their throat, it gave the defense a chance to really rise up. And I think when you do that in the playoffs, and especially those young guys, we're talking Hargrave, we're talking Burns, we're talking Davis, and you still have other guys too, like Cockrell and Shazier and Tuitt, that don't have a ton of playoff experience, and they were able to get in there, they were able to make plays. That's going to it's going to get them really confident going into the next round. And some people underscore confidence and that mental aspect of the game. I'm not one of those people. I think that's huge. And so, yeah, the offense didn't put them away. The offense made a lot of points that they should be feeling good about themselves. But at the same time, the defense made plays when they had to, which should have them feeling good about themselves. Think about if it was the other way around. If the offense scores that last touchdown, everyone goes into garbage mode. They end up giving yards and scores. They don't feel good about themselves going into Kansas City. Instead, Chazier's pick, the Mitchell sack fumble, the James Harrison had, that was, I think, the biggest play of the game, in my opinion, at the end of the half where he forces the fumble and Tua recovers. In my opinion, looking back on it, hindsight's always 20/20, but I look back on it now and say, this gave the defense a little bit of a nudge in the right direction, in my opinion. Brian, what do you think about the way that the game unfolded after the Steelers have come out with such a big, demanding lead?
You know what? This is NFL football, and a team is going to change their game. They're going to throw a lot of balls. They're going to throw so much more. So when I find out that they give up close to 300 yards against the pass, the passing defense gives up almost 300 yards, and you have the fact that Jarvis Landry was catching everything over the middle, but that's really all that they were getting. And you expect that, and you're going to expect that with the Kansas City Chiefs. But with any team trying to come back, you know, I throw late third quarter and fourth quarter stats out the window. I mean, you get into a different mindset when the score is what it is. I mean, when you have that much of a lead, and you just try to go ahead and win the game at that point on defense, and you're definitely going to give up some points there possibly, which they didn't give up too many. You're going to give up a lot of yards, but just like the Steelers always do, they bend, but they don't break. And that's exactly what happened yesterday. So I'm not concerned about the way the defense was in the fourth quarter, giving up a lot of yards in the fourth quarter, because, you know, that's garbage time to them, and it's desperation time for a team like the Dolphins. And it's got to be. You know at that point in the third period that every single drive, there's always going to be fourth downs. You know, it's always four down situations because it has to be when they need to come back because there's no tomorrow. It doesn't go in a loss column. It goes in the your season is over column. So that's what I think about that. And when we get to Porter, I have a lot to weigh in on that. I know you brought him up, Ken.
Yeah, we'll definitely bring him up.
As far as the Chiefs.
Go ahead, Ken.
Oh, no, I was just saying, as far as the Chiefs, you know, it's obviously going to be a different complexion to this game than the first one. I've been saying this every week. The way the Steelers have been winning these games are preparing them for a championship. And they're finding different ways to win it. None of their wins look similar. They're putting pieces of a puzzle together for a complete team. I think that's the story of this young team that's very talented. And I think now we can attack them multiple ways of you know, hitting them with the run when we want to. We can go and drive just straight 10 plays with the run. Or we can come out throwing the screens. We can come out throwing the long ball. We were doing that early in the season. I don't think we're not the underdog. We're not the underdog. Maybe to, you know, the betting lines or whatever, but Steelers, they are very dynamic. They just cannot beat themselves. I agree with you guys. I'm very worried about special teams. I don't know it. I don't know why they're doing certain things they do with the return game. Toussaint had the angle on the guy to beat him to the edge and get some yardage, and he's just too slow, and the guy caught him from behind. Anybody else is going to gain another 10 or so yards. You know, I don't understand that. And we have to watch out for Tyreek Hill. But I predict a win. I think it'll be close. And I think Ben's going to pull the win through for us at the end.
Well, Ken, I hope you're right. And as always, we appreciate the phone call, and I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys, thanks.
No problem. So it's going to be interesting, the Kansas City game, and we'll probably be talking about that all week. You on your show on Tuesday night, the Fact or Fiction, my show on Wednesday with Lance Williams, The Standard is the Standard. Make sure you check out those shows. We're going to be breaking down the Kansas City game in a lot of different ways. But something I want to talk about, and we'll, the phone lines are open. If you want to call in, you can. It's 347-850-8581. We have a few more minutes left here on the show before we call it an evening. Is Joey Porter. Now, we talked about Roethlisberger's foot. We talked about Kansas City, and then we pretty much talked about the Miami win, you know, exactly what it is. But Joey Porter, for those that don't know and you're living under a rock, Joey Porter was arrested Sunday afternoon, and a lot of details have emerged today. They happened at a bar in the south side of Pittsburgh. Porter went up to get into the bar. The bouncer told him he was not allowed in the bar. He particularly said that the last time Porter had arrived there, he threatened to kill the bouncer. So he wasn't going to let him in. Porter puts his hands on the bouncer, and an off-duty police officer comes over. Porter ends up putting his hands on the police officer. He gets handcuffed, taken away. A lot of different charges against him, from aggravated assault to public drunkenness. It's bad. It's just a bad situation. Brian, you said you had a lot to talk about. I'm going to let you go ahead and talk about Joey Porter for a sec.
Well, you know what? I am going to take almost a controversial take on this thing. And I'm going to say that I do not like the fact that the Pittsburgh Steelers suspended this guy, put him on leave of absence before his pretrial hearing on the 19th of January. And one of the reasons I don't like that is, he was in the wrong from the court reports that we're reading, the police reports. But a lot of things need to be looked at, and a lot of the situation needs to be looked at here. The reason I'm saying this is because the arresting officer, I'm just going to say right now, look into this guy on Google. If you Google this guy, I'm just reading something from 2011. It's called Top 5 Police Blunders, and this looks like this is a national report, and Paul Abel is number one for being off-duty, drunk, and pistol whipping a guy. There were other, he has also been accused of false reports in the past. So I'm wondering if this is a situation where you, where the off-duty police officer who is, I don't want to get into his height and weight, but he may have a Napoleon complex here. But it might just be a situation where you have somebody trying to make a name for himself, off-duty, not handling the situation in a calming and correct way, and that might have made it even worse. So I'm not completely sure what went on here. I'm sure, the bouncer is probably in the right here, but I don't know how well this situation was handled. And you're going and putting this guy on a leave of absence before he even gets a chance to even state his case. So that's something that I believe in innocent until proven guilty, and we don't have enough of this, especially with the media in this day and age.
You know, you bring up a good point, and it's certainly something, it's an interesting situation, I'll put it that way. It's an interesting situation because it's a coach, it's not a player. I feel like because it's a coach, the team actually has a little bit more leeway in terms of how they handle the situation. At the same time, Joey Porter also has a history. Unfortunately, he has a history. He had the history of, you have the incident in Las Vegas with the fight that was caught on film. You have another. I want to say he was driving under the influence of alcohol and was arrested, although those charges were dropped. The Steelers are not. I want to say he wasn't fired. Okay, he's put on leave. My guess is he's going to be on leave until his court date arrives. They're going to see how the court system handles it, and from there they're going to ultimately decide whether they want to keep him employed or not. That's just the course of action that they chose. So with that being said, I guess I can see your point, Brian. I really can. I can also see the point of the Steelers and what they did. One of the players today is reported by Jeremy Fowler. He said a player, he might have been joking, but maybe not been joking, said, hey, if Joey Porter's not around, we'll just go with coach player Debo. And that's pretty much the truth. I mean, if you're losing your outside linebackers coach, you've got one of the best outside linebackers in franchise history right there in the locker room. I hope we had to take over. Here's an interesting wrinkle. Okay, and I'm trying to find this here. This was posted on Twitter, and I didn't see it at the time until it was retweeted by Tim Benz. And Tim Benz is a radio analyst in the Pittsburgh area. He works for DK Pittsburgh Sports as well as a couple other venues. He does the post-game show for Steelers games and stuff of that nature. But he posted on Twitter, he actually quote tweeted Kevin Green. Now, Kevin Green, everyone knows, is a recent Hall of Famer. On January 9th at 6:41 p.m., Kevin Green took to his Twitter account, SackMaster91. He said, if Twitter is good enough for President-elect Trump, how about this? I'm ready and amped to coach again. It's time. Let's rock. I'm sorry, but that's just really crazy that a guy that used to coach the outside linebackers for the Green Bay Packers in 2010 when they beat the Steelers, he was on the other sideline. When all this comes down with Porter, he throws that out on Twitter. I'm not saying that the Steelers are looking at their Twitter accounts for HR advice, but what I am saying is that, well, if the Steelers are looking for someone that's kind of homegrown to take over, if they do decide to part ways with Joey Porter, Kevin Green would be a great pick, wouldn't it, Brian?
You know, quite possibly, yeah. And you said it right there. I mean, even a guy like player coach Debo. I mean, I think he's a coach right now in the locker room. I mean, they would not be hurting in that situation. In fact, I wouldn't even be surprised if they brought nobody in and made Jerry O linebacker coach in general, because they've always had linebacker coaches, but they just had these two guys, former players, in-house, and they didn't want to choose between them, so they had one as inside linebacker coach, one as outside linebacker coach. But I'm not sure, and something I'd like to look at, but how many – do you know, Jeff, how many situations in the NFL, or is this a rare situation that you have two linebacker coaches like that for the inside and outside? Because I'm not familiar with it. This is the first time I ever heard of it when they did it.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and I'd have to look it up. I'm pretty sure – speaking of Kevin Green, that he was the outside linebackers coach for the Packers. I don't think that the Steelers are alone by doing this. I would venture to guess that most teams only deploy a linebackers coach. That was the role that Keith Butler had prior to being promoted to the defensive coordinator position. So, it's definitely interesting. We have some people calling in. I'm sure they want to chime in on Joey Porter and what's going on with that, or maybe whatever they want to talk about. It's really up to them. 413-475-4410, you're on with Jeff and Brian. Go ahead.
Hey, guys, it's Caleb. How you guys doing?
What's up, Caleb? What's on your mind?
I just thought I'd give my two cents on the Porter situation. First off, it's really disappointing. Like he's had a history. I'm just learning about his history now, but it's disappointing to see he's a real role model on the team for the young players. Now, I just remember clips of him and Willie Gay celebrating and stuff like that. And, you know, you must think, like, if you're Shazier or if you're Jones or, you know, any linebacker there, I'm sure they're all going to be greatly impacted when he's not there on the game on Sunday. That's gonna be a big void to fill for Pittsburgh, and they're definitely going to be missing him. Just as an emotional and mental leader, and, you know, not even mentioning the actual coaching part of his coaching job, that'll surely be missed as well. But onto the Kansas City game, I think that I'm right there with you. The scariest part of this entire Chiefs team to me is Tyreek Hill and what he's able to do on the kick returns. I think you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, punt it out of bounds and kick it through the uprights. That's what we're trying to do here. Just avoid him getting the ball at all costs, because when he has the ball, he has, you know, Devin Hester ability to make big plays.
You know, Caleb, you're right about Joey Porter first and foremost. Now today, reporters were in the locker room. They were talking to a few players that were open for media to talk with them. And a lot of reporters asked the players about the Joey Porter situation, and almost to a T, they said, look, we're dialed in on the playoffs. It's not going to affect us. And it's easy for David DeCastro, who was one of those players, to say that. That's not his position, coach. I mean, those outside linebackers, especially someone young like Bud Dupree, who we talked about earlier, you know, he might lean on Joey Porter for a lot of different things during a game, in the prep, leading up to the game, analyzing tackle play, what will work, what won't work, you know, rip, up under, all that. There's different moves that they have to utilize to try to take advantage of anything they can. And he might not have that this week, so that could be a big factor. But in terms of Kansas City, yeah, I think that honestly, offensively and defensively, Pittsburgh matches up very well with Kansas City. But like you said, special teams is where they have a huge advantage. They're going to have to play smart. They cannot kick it short. Actually, if the weather's bad, that's one thing, and if you can't, you can't do it. But they have to play a really smart game with special teams. If I'm Mike Tomlin, I'm spending a lot of time in special teams meetings this week. Brian, when you look at Kansas City, the upcoming game, is there anything about the team other than special teams that might spook you a little bit?
Travis Kelce, 100%.
Yeah.
This guy is,
that's a good point,
almost Gronk, as far as I'm concerned. I think that's the one guy that scares me more than anything on this team. You know, just for the fact, Alex Smith is not a long ball guy. He's going to kill you over the middle. And now, not only Tyreek Hill on special teams, Tyreek Hill out of the backfield on a screen scares the bejesus out of me too, just because he is so dynamic. And when you look at the game that they played against Kansas City, they did not go unscathed completely when it came to Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill took one back on them, but it got called back, which it had happened the week before. This guy could have broken some records if not everything was called back, but he just has that ability every single time you go. But between this guy and Travis Kelce and very good defensive backs that are ball hawking, that led the league in takeaways. They actually tied with the Oakland Raiders with takeaways this year. This is a dangerous team, but I still think they match up very well, like you said. It's not going to be a gimme. It's going to be a great game all the way. That's why the line is so close. One thing that worries me about this game, too, is the fact that the same narrative that we had last week with the Steelers getting revenge, is Kansas City looking for revenge for a road game and coming back home against a team that embarrassed them back in week 4. That could be a possibility, too. There's so many things, but I think this Pittsburgh team, like you just mentioned, is the words dialed in. I think they're completely dialed in. I like the way they match up, and I'm looking for all systems go and just a great knockout, drag-out fight on Sunday.
Absolutely. Well, Caleb, we thank you for the phone call, man. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, no problem. There's just one more thing I want to say.
Sure.
I think that one matchup, which might be pitting the best, two of the best players at their positions in the entire NFL, Antonio Brown and Marcus Peters, are going to be going at it. That's going to be a fantastic matchup, and I think we have to. I think we really have to let the juice loose like we've never done before. Because Kansas, if there's one weakness on that Kansas City defense, it's their run defense. So thanks for having me on the show, guys. Have a good night.
Hey, you too. Thanks a lot. And you know, Marcus Peters and Antonio Brown is going to be fun to watch. Antonio Brown's gotten the best of Marcus Peters. They matched up when he was a rookie. And it wasn't pretty. Antonio Brown literally turned him inside out on more than one occasion. I'm sure that Marcus Peters will be better prepared, but there are just some players you can't stop, and I think Antonio Brown's one of them. Let's get to our next caller, 713-444-6116. You're on with Jeff and Brian. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. This is Steve from Houston. Listen to the show all the time. I appreciate everything y'all do. And really looking forward to facing Kansas City this week. I'm just excited for these guys. I feel like we're poised for championship run. Everything went good last week, except for Ben going down, of course, on that last pass, which kind of gave me a mini heart attack. But I'm excited for what these guys are doing. Joey Porter, that's unfortunate, but I don't think these guys are going to skip a beat. I think, just like DeCastro said, we're gonna keep on pushing.
Now, you know, you're from Houston, right?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, because obviously I'm hoping that the Steelers are going to be playing in Houston in a few weeks. If I were to ask you as a fan that just randomly called into the show, I know you said you listen, and I appreciate you always listening. What do you think the Steelers need to do to get their winning streak to 11 games, meaning they're in Super Bowl 51? What do you think is the main key for Pittsburgh?
Oh, it's protecting Ben for sure. I mean, just so you have that threat, because I don't think we can survive with Landry Jones back there. But it's really the guys that have stepped up on defense. I mean, you talk about them every week. Sean Davis, Artie Burns, Pree. I mean, these guys are stepping up in a big way on defense that these guys weren't even doing this against Kansas City the first time we played around. And just why Houston's there. I mean, they're the number one defense, even with Brock Osweiler as their quarterback. You got to have some defense.
Yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point. You know, we're at the end of the show. Hey, I appreciate you calling in. I really do. It's good to hear some fresh voices on the show from time to time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. And I'll be listening to you guys in the future.
No problem.
All right, bye.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. Brian, I have to ask you the same question. It's the last thing on the docket for us tonight. What do you think needs to happen for the Steelers to extend their winning streak from 8 to 11? And obviously you know what 11 straight wins would mean for the Steelers. What has to happen?
Not only do I want to see them playing in Houston in 3 weeks, I wouldn't mind seeing them play against Houston at home next week. But I think that might be just a complete pipe dream. But I wanted to throw that in there when I heard you say that. You know what I think needs to happen? I think exactly what they have drawn up as their team game plan right now needs to keep happening. And you have the offensive line to do it. The reason Le'Veon Bell is so good and so patient is because his line allows him to be so good and so patient. And if you can get him to have those 25 to 30 touches a game, when he's getting chunks of yards like that and setting up the pass, then they should win this game. If you have a guy like Travis Kelce have 100 yards, just like Jarvis Landry did yesterday, that's not a problem. Just keep him out of the end zone. And that's what was happening when the Dolphins got close to the end zone and when it got time to go ahead and get that game even closer, they would not break. They have a better goal line defense now. They have one of the best red zone defenses in the league in Pittsburgh. So this defense is no longer the slouch that we talked about 8 weeks ago, 9 weeks ago, when we were just shell-shocked after that four-game losing streak. So you need to make sure, we talked about him, make sure that Tyreek Hill does not go off. And the game plan this week was make sure Jay Ajayi does not go off. And so you need to have a plan in place to make sure that guy is shadowed, make sure that he is known as public enemy number one coming into this game. Get some pressure on Smith, but make sure – and remember the game just a few weeks ago, actually last week, remember the game against Cleveland with RG3 and hope that that could be a good primer and watch some of that game tape because, believe it or not, this guy knows how to run. He is probably – that could be a pretty good primer for this game, just remembering how well he was able to get loose and go ahead and throw against you on the run, because you're going to see some of the same things from a guy like Smith. So with that being said, just play your game, dictate the game. Don't worry about that crowd. Don't let that crowd get into your head. Just go ahead and be the Pittsburgh Steelers of the last 2 months and be your team, and you are going to advance if you do that.
Yeah, that's pretty much pretty much said it all right there. I can't really disagree with you. But you know what? It's been a great show. And at the end of every show, I give you a chance to kind of get on your soapbox. The bartender says, hey, last call. This is your last call, Brian Davis. What do you have to say to Steeler Nation out there?
Well, that was pretty much my last call. And all I'm saying is enjoy this run. This is a special team. It is not going to end here. Do not worry about walking boots. Do not worry about an assistant coach getting arrested. Just enjoy the process. Watch this special team play. They are gelling
as a team and a unit. They genuinely like each other. They genuinely are playing for each other. And one of the best moves that I have seen all year happen a few times, we didn't really talk about it, I'm going to say it right here, they were playing smart. And when a guy got a hot head and wanted to go after somebody, they did not let them do it. They stopped Darius Hayward Bay, and that's not a guy that gets angry. And he got angry for a reason, and they stopped him from getting a penalty and getting even more than a penalty. They also, when Bud Dupree was attacked basically by Jay Ajayi after that after hitting Matt Moore, he just put his hands up and backed up. He didn't retaliate. And so that's smart football. They're starting to play disciplined football. And that was the big thing earlier on in the season, during the losing streak, lack of discipline. We heard it from so many different corners. Now you're starting to see the discipline. Everything is coming together. And I want to quote the great George Papard from the A-Team, Hannibal Smith, "I love it when a plan comes together." And that's what you're seeing happening right before your very eyes right now. Don't worry about all the outside noise. Just worry about this team, this 53-man unit, playing as one, and that's what's happening right now.
Amen, brother. Sounds good to me. I'll tell you what, we hope this isn't our last Steelers hangover. Well, I will say this, win, lose, or draw, the last game, whenever that is, hopefully it's in February, we will have a Steelers hangover to talk about the outcome of the final game, and let's hope it's not this Sunday. The Steelers and the Chiefs go head-to-head Sunday at 1 o'clock. That game is on NBC, so thankfully we don't have to listen to Phil Sims and his idiotic comments all game. But still, make sure you check out Brian's podcast tomorrow of Fact and Fiction. Make sure you check out our Wednesday show, which is The Standard is the Standard, myself and Lance Williams. And as always, check out BehindTheSteelCurtain.com for all your Pittsburgh Steelers needs. I'm Jeff Hartman for Brian Anthony Davis. We'll see you next time on the Steelers Hangover. Bye.